The Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Lauren, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, a coffee break, and a main speaker. No coffee break tonight. Our first 10-minute speaker is Ilya M.
Thank you, Lauren. Hi, my name is Ilya, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much, Mary. It is an honor to get the call and, you know, to be able to do anything in AA. My sobriety date is June 8th, 2008. I have 13 years sober. This is not my first time getting sober, but it is a personal record. I'm just like a regular alcoholic. And, you know, I think about, you know, just like all the different stories that exist in this room. My story is such that, like, I needed to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to continue to come to Alcoholics Anonymous so I can just live like a regular workaday life. You know, like my experience, I think a lot about my sponsor's story, where, you know, it's like she went from, you know, like working those CD clubs, you know, to like a lawyer. And I, you know, my story is that, like, I got sober and I became someone who can, like, put trash in the trash can and, like, pay my bills on a regular basis. And that's just kind of like where I'm coming from. You know, it's like, I just did not have the life skills necessary to just, like, live a regular life. And I've gotten that in AA. I also think a lot about, you know, it's like, I have 13 years sober, and, you know, I've built a life, and, like, lots of specific things have happened, and lots of, like, really exciting things that have happened. But really, like, what has happened is that I was willing to listen to someone and take their suggestions. Like, and I was willing to be of service and to show up when I did not think it was necessary, and I didn't think it was reasonable. That is truly, like, what has happened for me in AA. And that's also just not my thing. You know, historically, you know, I live my life based on my instincts. And when I say instincts, I mean feelings. Like, I just, you know, it's like I would wake up in the morning and, you know, is this a day that I feel like going to work? No. Okay, great. We're not going to work. And that was, you know, and I guess I was under the impression that that's like, that that's how people lived. I grew up in, like, really chaotic, you know, violent alcoholism. And there was very little consistency. There was, like, a lot of chaos. And so there was a lot of, like, managing chaos. So there just wasn't a great example of, like, you know, well, this is what it looks like to just, like, live, you know, just to live every day, to not be bailing someone out of jail, to not be, you know, like, dodging fists and plates. And again, like, the very simple little life I have today is a direct result of, you know, of these things. You know, like I said, I grew up in bad alcoholism. My dad's an alcoholic. My mom's everything else. You know, she's like a rager. She's an overeater. She's like a terrible Al-Anon. And I, from the get-go, was terrified, just scared of everything. I could not understand. It felt, you know, I've heard people talk about this. It felt like people knew the rules and I didn't know the rules, and I really needed to focus so I could figure out the rules. And that made it hard for me to build any sort of relationship or, and feel any sort of connection with people, And I know now today that that is just my self-centeredness. And I quickly sought things that would kind of alter my perception. I started, you know, reading at an early age, watching a lot of television. And then, you know, I can honestly say today that like my saving grace was when I was like 10 or 11, I found self-mutilation. And I credit that to kind of like keeping me around long enough so I could like honestly like find a drink. And, you know, it was like a dark and scary time, and I needed something, you know. And Clancy talks about it, and it's like, I remember the first time he talked about kind of that spring that just like tightens, like that is what I felt when I was 9 and 10 years old. But it just felt like it was just this black stuff, and it would just get bigger and bigger. And the only relief I had at that time, you know, was to hurt myself. And, you know, because I was living in, you know, this chaos and, you know, alcoholism, like, you know, my parents weren't quite attuned to that. You know, which I fully understand, because it was, you know, we are, as a family, we are severely affected by the disease of alcoholism. Oh, great. Thank you. I had my first drink, when I was like 12 or 13, you know, I had like I'd convinced some girl to become friends with me. I was like holding her hostage, and, you know, we got drunk on Hollywood Boulevard, and, you know, I didn't immediately become an everyday drinker, you know, because my mom is also like super nosy. So she was like very involved in my life. So I couldn't just like go off and do my own thing. But it definitely laid the foundation. I knew after having that drink that was something I was planning on doing. And I immediately started making decisions, you know, to make that possible. I dropped those friends. I ended up with like I went to Pali High, and so I had like a lot of rich friends whose parents were, you know, just like otherwise engaged. And I just like partied. Like I graduated high school in 94. So there was a lot of Zima, and that continued. Like I got invited to leave college. I came back to Los Angeles. My parents were like, okay, well, if you're not going to go to college, you need to find a job. And I was just like, no, thanks. You know, and I became voluntarily homeless, you know, and I know now that that's just my alcoholism. You know, it's like, I was not able to drink and use the way that I needed to in my parents' house. So I was just going to be houseless, and I was fine with it. I eventually found Al-Anon, because I was like, well, the problem is my dad's drinking. It's not my drinking. And I worked that program to the best of my ability for a long time. And eventually my Al-Anon sponsor suggested that I was an alcoholic, because not everyone goes to rehab at 19. And I was like, everyone I know went to rehab at 19. So I don't know what you're saying. So I retired from Al-Anon so I could focus on my drinking. And my last year of drinking was like, you know, disgusting. I didn't believe in trash cans. There were roaches in my bed. You know, I went to a bar once and someone tried to talk to me, and I was like, never again. And I just spent the rest of the time just in my apartment. And the day I got sober, it was a Sunday. The Saturday before, I had done nothing out of the ordinary, drank until I passed out while talking to the television. And I came to on June 8th, you know, and I said that alcoholic prayer of, please God help me. And I was struck sober, and I did not, you know, I hit like a little bit of a pink cloud, and I didn't go to meetings. And then around like 30 days, I was just at my office, and I was typing on my computer, and I was like, I should buy a gun, you know, and then I started going to meetings, you know, and from that day to this, I have not had the desire to own a firearm, which I'm grateful for. And, you know, what it looks like today, like to compress like 13 years, you know, in like a couple minutes, quite honestly, I mean, I can do it. You know, I asked someone to be my sponsor. One of her first suggestions was that I go to the yard instead of meeting with my trainer. And like the moment of silence after she made that suggestion, like it just felt like years and like decades of silence. And, you know, I'm grateful that like, you know, that my defect of like being a good girl, I had that moment of grace, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. You know, and from that day to this, like my life has improved based on that, you know, it's like my spot, like I ask my sponsor for help. She gives suggestions based on her experience and sometimes not even based on her experience, but based on the fact that she does not have the same fears, perceptions, and concerns that I do about my life. So 1 minute. And for that, like I am, like, I'm super grateful, you know, just like having someone who can cut through the chaos, who can cut through the chaos has like changed my life. And, you know, like I said, like I have just like a normal, I mean, I just have like a normal life. Like I'm in school, I'm trying to become a preschool teacher. I have like a little boy. I got married. I have found in AA, a place where I can come and get that feeling of identification. There has been nothing more powerful in my life than telling someone my deepest, darkest secret. And they're just like, oh yeah, I did that too. Like there is nothing that beats that. And I'm so grateful that I get to try every day to like be that to someone else, you know, to tell someone, you know, to tell like a newcomer that like I've done the same thing. And you know, and that's not something that I have to do now that I'm sober. So I just, I love AA. I love PG. PG has changed the course of my life. My dad got sober here when I was like 16 or something. And, you know, these faces that I see on the screen, these are the faces I've been seeing since I was a mere youngster. So I'm so grateful. And I'm so, so in love with AA. And I am just here to serve. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Mark M.
Hey, everybody. Mark Alcoholic. Good to be here. Good to see you all. I'm going to go. I'm staying on the small square. I don't want to see myself up close and personal. I am so grateful for my life. I turned 40 on Christmas Day. And, I was at a meeting today with my sponsor. He's got 55 years, and the topic was gratitude. And I'm looking out of the square tonight, and I see members of the class of 81, the two nuns, Sister Sheila and Sister Mary, that were in the class, that are still in the class of 81 that I'm in. And I came into AA just as closed up, tightly wound, like Ilya shared. Great talk, Ilya. Thank you so much. Tightly wound, full of fear, hopeless, beat up, bad alcoholic. And when I walked in the doors of the Pacific Group on that Saturday night, it was lit up. It was buzzed. It was packed. And they picked me out and scooped me up. And they knew I was new, and they introduced me to guy after guy after girl after guy after gay. And just that's been my life ever since. The fellowship here in the Pacific Group is so strong and supportive and contagious. I mean, I was raised a Catholic kid in San Francisco, the Grover and Barber. It was a good life in the city. I bought hook, line, and sinker, the Catholic upbringing, and I was a sinner, and I was going to hell for sure, because if you can think it, you might as well have done it. And I could not think, because you're supposed to remember what the sins are so you don't commit them. But they're telling me if you think the sin, it's just as bad as doing it. So there was no way out of that. I was doomed long before I started drinking. And by the time I started drinking, it really saved my life. It just let the steam out. I remember that first night I got drunk in the bushes outside of Keystar Pavilion in San Francisco before the football game. It was Dorothy spinning down in the house in The Wizard of Oz from black and white into Technicolor. It was Monterey Pop. It was Woodstock all in that moment, man. I burst it out, and I was absolutely committed from that day for the next 16 years to drink every opportunity I can get. And it was a wild and crazy time in San Francisco in those days, back in the summer of love and 68, 69, 70, 71, 72. I was wild and crazy in the streets and got to the comedy scene started in 1976 in San Francisco, a little club called the Holy City Zoo. And I was doing my stuff in the streets of San Francisco, cartoons and rock and roll. And then that club opened up. And I remember the first night I did it, I was insane on the streets, but when I did it that night in that club in the Holy City Zoo, my insanity was accepted as brilliance. And I was off and running, man, off and running. Started my career in comedy, started touring the States, and had a run of success up until 19... By the time I got to the doors of AA, I had about 3 good years of success, and then it crashed and burned. And when I got into AA, I had to, my sponsor said, you need to get a job. You need to be self-supporting. And don't worry about your career. You don't know what your best foot forward is. So until you know what your best foot forward is, get a job, get committed, get commitments. So I did that. I remember when I came in today and I had my maybe 90, about 90 days before Christmas, my first year. And my sponsor goes, how you doing? I go, well, you know, I'm depressed. I'm depressed. You know, I don't feel good. You know, I'm depressed. He said, you got a job? I go, yeah. You got commitments at all the meetings? He goes, yeah. Mark, I didn't ask you how you felt. I asked you how you're doing. It sounds like you're doing good. And that was one of the pearls of wisdom. My feelings aren't real. I was nothing but my feelings. What I felt, I always felt bad. That's my reality. I'm not doing good. I feel bad. That started to turn around my perspective. It's a disease of perspective. And when I started to look outward at what I was achieving and what I was doing, I was one amongst many. You look around the room, and it's the same today. Into action. My problems are really nothing. It's my thinking about them that becomes so much greater a problem. My sponsor now, Bob R., has taught me to be brief. When I call him up, I want to ruminate. I want to build it up. I want to magnify it, make it more than it is. And it never is. When you state the problem, it's 10 seconds. It's not really a problem. It's just a thing. Let it go. Move on. Be grateful. I'm so grateful for my life today. You know, so many things have occurred. 40 years, I look back. Matt Johnson was on the meeting today. He was the first guy I ran into at the yard. And I just couldn't believe when I showed up at that yard 40 years ago, grown men just having a blast, laughing, just you had to pay 50 cents if you cussed and swore at the yard. And it just turned a dark soul, me, that nothing really changed except seeing everyone else with a changed perspective about being that way. And we're all in it together and we're helping out one another. And it's just been that way year after year after year. And if you're new looking back, well, you got 40 years. It's easy to look back and say all that stuff now. It hasn't changed. It has not changed. What you are going through right now, if you're new, is going to be the same night after night, day after day. This is our life. You piece it together. It turns out it's a good life, a good week, a good month, a good year. You stay close, you stay connected, and that's the game. That's the life we have here, and it's rich and it's supportive. There is nothing that you can go through alone again. We don't have to be alone, and we welcome you to share that with us. The real problem is not communicating, to thinking, and I'm a classic one. I got this. I got it. I keep it inside. I kind of ruminate on it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. The more you can let it go and get real, and as fast as you can do it, the more you can move on and get back into the groove of things. I'm grateful for the partner I got, Linda, and the life we have here in AA, in my life here, my home life. I'm grateful for my good friends, Charlie, and the class of 81. It's your new, get your friends, get your group, get your posse, get your group that you move with. And, we have class banquets. We still do it, even though it's been on Zoom the last couple of years. Benchmarks that remind us. I took a 40-year cake for the Encino Hills meeting, and that was started by Vin Cho 30-something years ago. I was at that meeting then, and the heritage of strong sponsorships that comes down is so strong. And here we are with many people carrying that mantle, the way Clancy had sponsorship and discipline and structure of the group. Now you got Tim Kruger with his babies and the young guys doing it just as well. And it's a joy. And I am so grateful for my life. And I'm grateful for all you. And thank you for letting me share.
Our main speaker tonight is Philo H.
Hi, I'm Philo. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here. Thank you so much, Mary, for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. I have some today, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have any when I got here. And, my sobriety date is January 4th of 1987. So I'm knocking on 35 years, but I'm not there yet. You know, got to take it a day at a time. And so I'm 34 years sober. And if that seems like a lot to you, well, my friend Joan is here on the Zoom with 64 years. And when I turned 34, Joan said, that's a good start. So it's a question of perspective. It really is, you know, so 34 may seem a lot like to you, you know, but it's like for Joan, it's a good start. And, Joan and I have been here on the Zoom, I think, at PG for the last, gosh, I started stalking Joan because I learned early on in Alcoholics Anonymous that you need to stick with the winners. And, you know, Joan has, I think she had a year and a half more sobriety than Clancy. And, you know, and is up to 64 now. And I'm like, I'm following you, lady. I don't know where you're going on Zoom, but I'll be there. And we've just become the best of friends. And on Wednesday nights, it was like, where's our Wednesday meeting? Well, we're going to Pacific Group. So it's like we've been here. And I just want to say happy birthday to Gola. And thank you for your service. And to, Spencer and Tina and those of the Zoom crew, you know, as well as Mary and Dave, just because it's like those of you that are keeping us checked in online, I appreciate you. And sometimes there's less applause for that. So I'm applauding for you all. And happy birthday, Mark. Thank you, Ilya. I am, normally on Wednesday nights, I work. I go to childhood trauma therapy because I come from a lot of trauma. And then I come to PG. And tonight, it's good. I was really looking forward to seeing so many of you in person. And today, it's like we're back on Zoom. So here we are. And, you know, and I know that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that there's a reason for everything. And so maybe there's somebody out there that's going to get something out of my trashy little story today that needed to be here online that wouldn't have been able to been there in person. So who knows? I'm just grateful that I'm here and be able to have a story to tell. I'm from a really messed up family. You know, I don't think it makes me an alcoholic. I've met people in Alcoholics Anonymous, some possibly in this room, who like grew up in fabulous million-dollar homes in Bel Air and Malibu, and didn't want for anything. Well, that's not my story. My story is I grew up in a little section of Seattle, Washington called White Center, which is not so white and not so central. And it's affectionately known as Rat City to everyone that lives there. I was speaking in Atlanta recently on Zoom, and this guy came back with a t-shirt, and he was like, Filer, I have to show you this t-shirt. And I was like, what? He had a Rat City, Washington t-shirt. I'd never even seen one before, but there was this big old rat smoking a cigarette with a bottle of Jack Daniels and the pool cue, you know, and I was like, yes, those are my people. So it's like, I don't come from a good place, you know, and their alcoholism surrounds me on all sides. I think they told me in AA when I was new that if alcoholism runs down one side of your family, you're 60% more likely to become an alcoholic. Well, I was 120% more likely to become an alcoholic, but that's not entirely true, you know, because my brother is grew up in the same house with the same mentally ill mom, and all the abuse boxes got checked for him as well. And, you know, he's barely ever touched a drink. I don't think he's ever done a drug. He's, 380 pounds and a hoarder, but he is not an alcoholic. So if you grow up in my family, you're going to have a lot of issues, but you're not necessarily going to have alcoholism. And personally, I think I'm the lucky one because not only got alcoholism, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought was going to be the worst thing that could have ever happened to me, and it's turned out to be the greatest. And if that's not your experience yet, please keep coming back until it is. Because, I started drinking at the age of 11, you know, and I was just a stressed out kid. My mom was constantly suicidal and going to kill herself. And she'd tell you that on any given Tuesday. If it served a purpose to control the room that day, she'd let you know. So it was like, I was just this kid trying to do everything perfectly so mom wouldn't die today. And, and my dad wasn't always around because he wants to be around crazy all the time. Like, I get that now. I didn't get that then, you know, but I get it now. And so it's like, I get he's not there and I'm just left with like her. So I'm just trying to do everything perfectly so mom won't die. And, you know, I was boy of the year at White Center Heights Elementary School in sixth grade, Bonnie, right? And it's like, woo-woo, because that's when things peaked, was sixth grade. Because after that, that summer, I went over to Billy Kincaid's house to spend the night, and his mom went out. It was the first of the month, so his mom had gotten her check, and she ran off to St. Bernadette's to play bingo, and she forgot a fifth of lime vodka on the table on the way out the door. And I was like, Billy, let's party. So we got out this plastic punch set because we're 11, and every party we had ever had involved a plastic punch set, plastic being an operative word, because we ain't fancy people. So we pull out our plastic punch set, and we pour in a one-fifth of lime vodka, and I'm like, no, we need something else for this punch. And so we pull our change, and we decide on one can of Squirt, because Squirt is a citrus-flavored soda, and lime is a citrus. So this makes sense. We want to put these things together, right? So it's like we pour in one can of Squirt and stir. And for me, you know, I know that this isn't everybody's story. I know that the disease of alcoholism is something that tends to be fun, and then fun with problems, and then becomes problems. It's a progressive thing, you know. For me, it was an instant reaction, and that's not the case with everyone. So if you're new and you didn't like discover America the first time you drank, well, I discovered America. And I, you know, my friend Father Terry just turned 50 years sober, and he says that alcohol was the perfect imitation of a spiritual experience. And if a Catholic priest says that that's the perfect imitation of a spiritual experience, well, hey, I guess it's true for me too, you know. I didn't know that things were that wrong, Jimmy, until I was like that, like, ooh, I didn't know that things were that wrong until I had alcohol in my body. I picked up that punch cup and I took that drink, and it was almost all vodka, let's be real. And it burned and it went down. And I exhaled for the first time in 11 years. You know, like I'd been eating a cocktail for 11 years and I didn't know it. It was like, oh, my goodness, like, oh, I didn't know things were that wrong until I discovered that they could be that right. And the more I drank, the less I cared. The more I drank, I thought, you know, I'm going to do this as often as possible every day for the rest of my life. And I proceeded to head out to do just that. And, you know, I was a teenage alcoholic. I drank all through junior high school. I saw Sarah T, Portrait of a Teenage Alcoholic. It's an ABC after school special on Channel 4. Betty remembers, you know, Linda Blair was the star. And it's like, you know, She was to warn kids of the evils of alcohol. And when I got out of it, it was like, whoa, is she putting booze in Tupperware containers and taking them to school with her? What a great idea. I don't think that was the message that ABC was going for showing this, but that's what I got out of it. You know, I graduated from high school, which was a big deal in my family because, you know, neither of my brothers, it was this big deal. My parents didn't finish high school. It was just, so it was this big deal, you know, and my family, it was like, Lee, you got to finish high school, Phyla, finish high school. Well, I finished high school, you know, and they had a senior breakfast. I didn't even know there was such a thing, but it was like somehow I ended up there and they had a slideshow for every student. And they're like, Kathy Gullickson. Remember when Kathy Gullickson won the Washington State debate tournament for a debate on evolution versus creationism? Oh, yes. Kathy Gullickson, everyone. Phyla Hogan. Remember when Phyla Hogan was passed out in the school parking lot and everyone parked their cars around him and no one woke him up until third period? Everybody laughed and somebody yelled, you know, which time? And everybody laughed louder. And I laughed louder than all of them. You know, because I've mastered this art of never letting you know that I have a feeling about any of it, never letting you know that I care, never letting you know that you're going to, never letting you get to me or visually, you know, you'll never know. And I'm in the back, you know, just 82, brew, brew, yeah. But later on, I'm in the bathroom alone having a private moment, you know. And I'm having this private moment and I have this thought. And this thought is, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? 4 years at this crappy school and this is what I'm being remembered for? This is what I'm being remembered for? Oh my God. There's something really wrong with you and your drinking, Phyla. There is something really wrong with your drinking. So if you're new and you've had a moment of clarity, congratulations. They're a pretty awesome thing. The problem is if you're an alcoholic of my type and kind, I have moments of clarity a lot. I'm just incapable of holding on to that information and able to do anything with it when I need it the most. You know, I make a little resolution. I have to do something about my drinking. And I come out of the bathroom and Tony Asconelli says, hey, there's a kegger at Arlene's tonight. And I'm like, whoa, kegger at Arlene's. Woo! You know, my resolution is gone. It lasted that long. And that's just the way it is, you know, because the insanity of alcoholism in my experience is sort of like threefold. And I think the first fold is sort of like, you know, it's going to be different this time. And here's how, right? Because I'm partying with Lulu tonight. You know what I mean? Lulu and I, we've had a whole plate of Mexican food tonight, baby. We're not drinking on an empty stomach. We're going to like, because that's what happened. We might drink on an empty stomach. And, you know, and I'm not hanging out with Mary tonight because things got crazy with Mary. And, you know, she wanted that red wine. She wanted to drink that red wine. We're having tequila already. If she hadn't brought that red wine, it wouldn't have been such a disaster. So I'm not hanging out with Mary. I'm hanging out with Lulu. Woo, and we're, you know where we're going? We're going to that club. We're not going to that club. This is because it's that club there, because, you know, the bouncer there is the one that's the problem, you know, and there's always something I'm trying to do to figure it out, you know. And our book talks about how we are people left around our vices, cannot stop ourselves from putting our hands on a hot stove. And I'm trying to arrange this all and make it work, and then bam, I'm burning myself again over and over and over. You know, and then this other part of like the disease of alcoholism in my experience, when it gets a little progressive further, is when you know you're going to lose that job you just got. You know, that relationship that's just kind of starting is on the edge. And if I go out tonight, you know, they said it's going to, they're going to leave, you know, like, oh gosh, like, you know, that things are going to go up in flames if you go out and do this again tonight. But, you know, somehow it's a Thursday and I just got to go out, right? Because somehow this liquid's more important than whether or not I have a job or I have a love in my life or I have things that are going on. So I'm making these decisions all the time. They're like worse than the decisions that I'm making. So it's like, you know, and our book talks about you can also become going to this place where you go beyond human aid. And that's certainly my experience. I'm like an alcoholic of a type and kind of comes to on a regular basis in places with people I would never know and want to talk to. And you guys taught me about coyote syndrome here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys told me you suffer from it a lot, don't you, Phyla? And I was like, what is it? And they said, well, it's when you wake up when there's somebody on your arm and you'd rather like chew your arm off than wake them up to find out what's going on or who are you. And I was like, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like, I have coyote syndrome. You know, you guys taught me about that here in AA. But it's like, I'm a blackout drinker. I don't know what's going on. Things are getting worse. I'm ending up in places and situations with people that are really, I should not be with. I'm constantly putting myself in danger. You know, I would go to the bar. I'd have to be drunk before I even got to the bar to go to the bar. And by the time I get to the bar, I would like blackout somewhere there and I'd come to somewhere else again. It was constantly going on. And I'd be like, I am not doing this again. I am not doing this again. But by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm drunk off my ass. And I'm not even talking myself into it or out of it anymore. I'm just drinking whether I want to or not. You know, and we moved out the day after I graduated from high school, a friend and I, and we held on to that apartment for 3 months, which I think is pretty good. And then, you know, I ended up on the streets and there's these kids on the streets. And I'm like, you know, boy, these kids are sad. And there's these kids that are breaking into cars. And I'm like, whoa, your kids are sad. That's bad. You're breaking into cars, you know. And then like a week later, I'm saying, wait a minute. Did you just break into that car without breaking the glass? How'd you do that? You know, they tell us in Alcoholics Anonymous that it's like open-mindedness and willingness are like keys to sobriety, but they're keys to my descent as well. Like the thing I didn't have was the honesty. Like, how did you know I was lying? My lips were moving because it's like constantly everything that came out of my mouth was a lie. And I'm an alcoholic of a type and kind who draws a line in the sand and says, if I ever get this bad, I am done. And then I would get that bad and I'd be like, you know what? I really think I was overreacting on that one, don't you? I can live with this. I can live with this. I can live with this. Let's draw that line further out. But eventually it just got really that bad. And I'm thinking, well, if I'm just staying loaded all the time, who cares? Who cares? You know, and there's these kids who are like hanging out in front of JCPenney's and hopping in cars with strangers and having sex for cash. And I'm like, whoa, I'm never going to be one of those kids. And a few months later, after lots of terrible situations, and I'm on a really rainy night like this in Los Angeles, this is very Seattle weather right now, you know, a really rainy night, cold, I'm out of money and I'm really thirsty. I'm thinking, whoa, how bad can it be? And the answer is, it can be pretty bad. In fact, I really need a drink after that. And once I start drinking, I don't seem to be able to stop. And once I don't stop, my money seems to disappear. So I guess I got to hop in another car and have sex with another stranger so I can get over, so get some more money so that I can like drink over the fact that I'm hopping in cars and having sex with strangers. And this is my cycle of woe that lasts for the next like 3.5 years. And you know what? One of the things that I've learned in AA is that we can be helpful here, not in spite of what we've done, but because of what we've done. We can be helpful here to other alcoholics and Alcoholics Anonymous, not in spite of who we are, but because of who we are. And there isn't one single thing that happened to me out there, some of which has literally probably scarred me for life, you know, but it's like there isn't one single piece of it that hasn't shown up on somebody's fifth step where they're like, oh my God, Fowler, I really don't want to talk about this. And I'm like, it's okay. You know, I got baggage, honey. You know, it's like, tell me what's going on. And it's like, and then I get to listen to this and go, oh yeah, I have a story like that too. And then, you know, and we don't have to drink over that today. We don't have to drink over that today. So it's like everything that happened to me, there was a night where it was really, really bad. A night that fit, I was thinking about this earlier. So it was a night not unlike this one where I was really just like, how much longer does this have to go on? How much longer does this have to go on? And I said a little prayer. I was not in the habit of praying, but I said this little prayer and I said, God, how much longer does this have to go on? And I heard this voice. And this voice said, you're almost finished. Your story isn't quite done yet, though. And I thought, story? And I said, story for what? Story for who? Who would I ever tell this to? I'm not telling anybody what's going on here. And apparently I have a story that I'm going to share on Zoom with people at the Pacific Group on a Wednesday and a rainy Wednesday night, you know, and it's like, and I keep sharing this story because it's the story that you guys gave me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, on January 3rd of 1987, I was running down the street with no shoes on, no shirt, screaming at people. You know, I live not far from right off of Koreatown. Every night around 3 or 4 a.m., there's somebody out there like, whoa, 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 and I'm like, oh, there I go. You know what I mean? Like, I am not somebody that anyone wanted to know when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was the kind of person that showed up in the rooms and sat down and people moved to the opposite chairs. You know, it was like, whoosh. I was not a vision for you when I got here. On January 3rd of 1987, I was running down the street with no shoes and shirt on, screaming at people, and I ran into the police. And apparently I had a lot to say to them, and the police apparently had a lot to say to me, because I came to locked to a bed in Harborview Hospital at a mental health lockdown unit, which is somewhere I had never been before. Maybe I said I was going to harm myself or others. I don't know, but it's like, hey, we're here. And this nurse comes in, Judy, and she asks me all these questions. And she says, oh, these ask me all these questions. And I lie on most of the answers, because if you tell them the truth, you know, they're going to send you to rehab. So it's like, so I'm telling them. But finally, she says, you know what, Philo, I'm going to tell you what your problem is. And I got really excited. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, I've known I had a problem. Everybody knew Philo. That Philo, he has a problem. Like, everybody knew I had a problem, but I didn't know what it was. So I got kind of excited. She's, I'm going to tell you what your problem is, Philo. And I was like, oh, okay. What is it? What is it? And she said, your problem is that you're a chronic alcoholic. And I was like, how dare you, lady? Like, I'm 22 years old. How could I possibly be a chronic alcoholic? Well, we've learned over time in Alcoholics Anonymous that alcoholism, it says in the book, progresses so much faster in women and children than, you know, and I've been drinking for 11 years on a pretty daily basis. And I was really, really sick when I got here. Yeah, I would wake up every morning and like throw up. It's just like, and somehow this became normal. I would like, the things that become normal are so crazy, how this disease of alcoholism tells us that things that are completely unacceptable are fine. It wasn't always that way, but boy, was it bad when I got here. But I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys started sending me to a place called the Capitol Hill Alano Club. And they took us there every day at noon. And every day at noon, there was the same cast of characters. And everybody had funny little names back in 1987. There was like Cowboy Tom with the hat. There was like Irish Annie, who was so ginger, it was obvious, you know, I was like, of course he's Irish. Why do we have to keep pointing? You know, it was like, these names were kind of ridiculous. And Fat Joe and Big Book Robert. And it was like, and there was this guy, Directions Doug. And Directions Doug got his name because he would share the exact same thing at every single Alcoholics Anonymous meeting I ever heard him at, which was every day at noon. And every day at noon, all of the meetings were 90 minutes long. There were no speaker meetings like this. They were all 90-minute topic discussions. So if Doug was there, you knew you were going to have to listen to him. And he got his name by saying the same thing over and over. And what he would say was this. He'd say, my name's Doug. He's from the South. He'd say, my name's Doug, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm here to tell you all about the directions here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And directions are, you go to meetings. You don't drink or use between these meetings. You get a sponsor, you call that sponsor. You get a big book, you read your big book. And if all else fails, you follow these directions. And the directions are, you go to meetings. You don't drink or use between these meetings. You get a sponsor, you call that sponsor. You get a big book, you read your big book. And then if all else fails, why don't you follow these directions, which are, you go to meetings. You don't drink or use between these meetings. So I attacked him in the kitchen. And I was, because you know how we love a little drama in Alcoholics Anonymous. So everyone's gathered around like, oh, the newcomer's attacking Doug. Let's watch. So everyone's there. And he's like, oh, yeah, Philo. And I'm like, listen, we know what the directions are. We're not stupid. Like, how do you, He's like, oh, well, let's review them, shall we? And he's like, Philo, let's see. You're still coming with the kids from lockup, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. He said, well, I guess we won't worry about that first part. He said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no. He said, well, I guess you're not calling that sponsor either, are you? I said, well, I guess not. You know, and he said, well, you know, have you got a big book? And I said, yeah. He said, oh, good. Have you opened it? And I'm like, no. And he's like, okay, all right. Hey, everybody. Philo knows what the directions are, but Philo ain't doing any of them. So what good is it for Philo to know what the directions are if he's not doing them? Because Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of action. It's not a program of knowing. It's not a program of thinking. Right, everybody? It's a program of doing. So he says, well, I'll make a deal with you, Philo. He said, I'll stop sharing about the directions. if you start actually doing them. And everyone's eyes got wide, like I had been given the key to save us all. And I was like, oh, come on. And everyone's cheering. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And everyone's like, yay. And the next day, Doug was there at the Nooner. He started in the directions and I bolted for the door. Because my MO is always, well, if you hurt me or you piss me off, watch me hurt me and then you're really going to suffer. Which makes no logical sense whatsoever. And I had no idea until you guys taught me that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But on my way out the door, this 6'4", 280-pound Native American woman named Tiny grabbed me by the back of the neck, slammed me in a chair next to her, and she said, don't you leave. We're talking after the meeting. And I was like, you're right, Tiny, you're right. We're talking after the meeting. We're talking after the meeting. And after the meeting, she said, Philo, I'm worried about you, kid. And I was, one, I was shocked that she knew my name. And two, I was surprised that somebody, it's been a long time since somebody had said they were worried about me. And she said, Philo, I'm worried that you're so smart, you're going to think your way right out of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you just have to be stupid to believe that showing up here for an hour, hour and a half, say a little prayer, do a little write, and make phone calls is going to change your life beyond your wildest dreams. Gosh, you have to be stupid to believe that. But she said, honey, the next time you're outside and the wind's blowing and it blows right through you because there ain't a whole lot inside you right there, next time the wind's blowing and it blows right through you, I hope you're stupid enough to believe that Alcoholics Anonymous can fill that hole back up for you. She said, because it has for me. And I said, you know, fine, lady. Thanks for sharing. And I ran outside. And a day or two later, the wind was blowing and it blew right through me. And I said, oh, my gosh, what did she say? I got to get stupid. And I went back and I found her. And I said, Tiny, will you sponsor me? And she said, no, but Ed will. And Ed was not the person that I wanted to have sponsor me. But Ed said, come on, I'll buy you a short stack at the International House of Pancakes. And, you know, I had sort of sold my virtue for a lot less than a short stack at the International House of Pancakes. So it was like, okay, I'll go. Okay, whatever. Yeah. And he got out this blue book and he would get this book out every single time we were there. And we'd read a little and he'd say, do you know what this word means? And I'd say, yeah. He'd say, what's this word mean? And I said, I have no idea. And we'd look it up. This guy cared enough about me knowing what was in this book that he took the time to get out a freaking dictionary and look up words that I didn't understand so that I got them. I was drunk through junior high and high school. I didn't pay any attention. I didn't have much of an education. You know, it's like I didn't know what lots of stuff meant. But this guy cared enough to take me through the big book. And every time it said to do something, we did exactly what it said to do. No more, no less. And every time I questioned him, he'd turn back to the beginning and say, no. Remember here, it says the purpose of this book is to show you precisely how to have a spirit, how to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's why we're doing what's precisely outlined in this book. And as a result of what's doing then precisely what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor, it's like I've gotten to have a life that kids who come from where I come from do not get to have. There's absolutely nothing special about me other than somebody cared enough to take me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had this much willingness to do it a day at a time, you know, a day at a time. We went through the book and he'd ask me questions. One day he said, let's review. And I said, review what? He said, are you powerless over alcohol and your life has become unmanageable? And I said, yes. It's like this thing happens when I drink, or this thing goes off. That's just like more. And it becomes louder. And he's like, right, exactly. Okay. So have you come to believe that that some power greater than yourself can restore you standing? And I said, yes. Like my head is so loud. You guys call it the committee. All those voices arguing all the time. Nothing's been able to shut that up except booze. But when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I sit here for an hour and a half, boy, my head is so much quieter than it is when I got in here. He said, well, would you be willing to turn your will and your life over the care of G.O.D. group of drunks? What if your God was a group of drunks to start? And I said, I'd be willing to do that. And he said, well, great. Let's say this prayer. And he slid out of the booth at the International House of Pancakes and got on his knees. And I was like, what are you doing? He said, we're going to say this prayer. And I'm like, we're in an International House of Pancakes. And he said, Philo, when have you ever been worried about your reputation? Come on. So I was very worried about it then, sober, looking around, making sure no one was watching me praying with this old guy in an IHOP. but we said this prayer. And then we got back up and he said, hey, here's your notebook. And I'm like, for what? He said, we're going to start your fourth step. And he opened it up. He drew a line down one page, a line down the other. And he said, who do you hate the most? And I was like, where are we doing our fourth step for? I just finished step three. And he said, exactly. But it says here in the book, unless at once followed by a vigorous, what does the words at once mean to you, Philo? And I was like now. And he's like, that's why we're doing it, just like now. So that's what I mean. It's like we did exactly what was outlined in the big book. I got to do a fifth step with him, you know, and I got to share all this stuff for 13 hours that no one should have to listen to. And at the end of it, because I always thought, like, if you really knew who I was, you would not want me here, you know. And at the end of it, this guy, this big old straight guy, you know, this biker dude gave me this big old bear hug. And gave me a little kiss on top of the head right there. And he said, God, I love you, kid. And I was like, how on earth is that? How is this that you know more than anybody? And somehow you seem to love me more than any. Like, how is that happening? Like, there's something crazy, powerful, wacko that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of working these steps, you know? And he said, we're going to get to the amends. We got to the amends. And he said, you're going to start with for your amends. And I said, who? And he said, you're going to start with Billy. And I said, why? Because he's the one I want to do the least. And he said, exactly. And I said, well, you're an idiot, Ed. Because he said, why am I an idiot this time? And I said, because, you know, I haven't even seen Billy in a year and a half. And he said, well, I just have a feeling about this one. We're going to start with Billy. And I want you to say a little prayer about it. And I'm like, you and all your praying. Okay, I'll say a little prayer. And I'm like, okay, God, whatever, you know, spirit of the universe. I'm willing to make amends to this guy. Bring it on. The next day, I'm riding my bicycle to Freeway Park. Yes, I have a bicycle. Someone in AA had given me a bicycle. I'm riding my bicycle. Woo, doo, 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 doo. And I'm like, woo, doo, doo. And I hear this feeling. And this feeling says, you know, no, go to Volunteer Park. And I'm like, but I don't want to go to Volunteer Park. So I turn my bike around. Eventually I go, okay, I'm going to Volunteer Park. Who am I even arguing with? So I go to Volunteer Park. And I get to Volunteer Park. And it's a beautiful day in Seattle. A beautiful day. So there's hundreds of people laying out in the sun, you know, because it's 1987 and we did that back then. So we're like laying out in the sun and I sit there on my blanket for an hour, hour and a half, and they get this feeling like sit up, sit up, sit up, sit up. And I sit up and there's Billy doing a beeline for me. There he is walking through this crowd of people, just walking right towards me. And I'm like, holy crap. You know, the ninth step promises in Alcoholics Anonymous are the ninth step promises, I think, for a reason. Because it's like I got instantly that not only is there some power going on here in AA that could set up something overnight, but this was also somebody who had tried to kill me on a couple of different occasions. You know, it's like someone I did not feel safe around at all. And yet here I am in a crowded public park surrounded by people and feeling kind of safe to be able to say, hey, can I talk to you? And he's like, yeah. You know, and he gets really mad, but he sits down and I'm like, I need to make this situation right. So he's like, who are you? You know, like, what did you do with Philo? And I'm like, you know, it's like, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous now. I've been sober for 9 months and I need to make this situation right. So you guys taught me that amends was not about saying I was sorry. I said I was sorry for everything all the time and my behavior never changed, you know? So there I am, like, cleaning up my side of the street. He never made any amends for trying to murder me, Zeke. You know, he never made amends for any of that. But it's like, you know, somehow this hatred that I have for this person leaves. Like, wow, like, the steps work. Like, wow, I get to, like, work these steps. And all of this stuff that I've been carrying around that I didn't want to carry around, all this baggage gets to go somewhere else. And I get to finally be maybe the person that I was always supposed to begin with and never had a chance to, you know? And I got to, like, make a lot of amends and do all this work and, like, start to have a life, like I said, that kids who come from where I come from do not get to have. In 3 years sober, I thought, you know what? I'm moving. I'm going to get as far away from my crazy family as I can. I'm moving to California. Woohoo! You know, it wasn't that far. But it's like, for me, it was like a million miles, right? So it's like, and I moved to San Francisco. And if somebody said, why don't you look up Suzanne? she might sponsor you. She'd be a good sponsor. So when I got there, I followed direction. I knocked on the door and I said, hey, Suzanne, you know, they told me to look you up. And she was busy arguing with her partner and her cows to smell like cats and cigarettes. And no one paid any attention to me for about half an hour. And so I just kind of snuck out the door and kind of left. And I thought that was not a vision for me. And you know what? I'm 3 years sober now, so I don't think I need a sponsor anyway. Yeah, I don't need a sponsor. I got this. I'm doing so good. And I was temping at this temp law firm and they hired me. They hired me. Me, I'm working in a skyscraper, like handling like money and stuff. I'm like, woo, me. Oh my gosh. Isn't this amazing? And I go to this cafe. There's this boy that's working out. He's so cute. And I'm like kind of falling in love. And I'm like, woo, you know what? And then like he starts, he asked me out. Oh my God, it's amazing. You know, and it's like, woo. And I start to have, oh my God, I'm so in love. I'm having this great job in San Francisco. I have a life. Well, a year later, not only did that guy get fired from that job, I got like escorted from the building by security, you know, because it's like, and not only did that relationship go up in flames, it went up in the kinds of flames that hurt all kinds of people that weren't even involved. Because it's like, I didn't get that it's not alcoholism, it's not alcoholism, it's alcoholism. I didn't get that those character defects that we work these steps on to keep in check start to come up in other different ways. And, you know, and I can start to be just as alcoholic sober as I was if I'm not doing what I need to do on a spiritual basis here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And as a result of that, I've gotten to have, like, go back and, like, I ended up finding Wally and I said, hey, Wally, will you sponsor me? And I ended up going through the book with her and I got to work the steps and do 90 meetings and 90 days again. And the promises come true. And woo, every time I do the work here, nothing but good comes from it. And yet every single time, no matter how long I've been sober, every time it comes time to do the work, my head will fight me on actually doing any of it. I can sit down to write a 4-step today and be like, ooh, gosh, those floors look like I might need to get down there and mop them. You know what I mean? It's like things that I would never even normally want to do. Suddenly my head, my alcoholic mind was thinking, hey, it's more important for you to stay a little more resentful and fearful than it is to, like, you know, get out of here and be as happy, joyous and free as you can today. And, you know, what I tell my sponsees is like, why postpone joy? Why postpone joy? Because we got so much of it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's work those steps. Hey, it's been 3 weeks. Get it done. Why postpone joy? You know, because it's like, that's what I've gotten here in AA. I've gotten to have like the kind of, oh my gosh, I had gotten to have a life that I could not even fathom. You know, and 12 years ago, I moved to Alcoholics Anonymous and I moved to Los Angeles, you know, but my mom died 5 years ago today. And after she died, all this childhood trauma crap came out of nowhere that people had been warning me about my whole sobriety. Because if you knew my family, you would be like, whew. You know, I ended up in a lot of therapy, ended up doing, you know, lost my business, lost my job, lost my car, did it all sober, you know, and then I got the stupid part-time job managing the log cabin and like the West Hollywood Recovery Center. And we got to have lots of Zoom parties and like, stay sober. Let's have slams. Let's have speaker slams. So many of you spoke there, you know, and then this job came open to managing central office. And I was like, maybe I should apply. And it turned into like, you know, and they told me it was so bizarre when like she offered me the job, because it's kind of, I almost kind of said, do you know who I am? And she said, we know exactly who you are, Philo. And that's why we want you to work here. You know? So it's like, how on earth does this happen? It's like, it's all been an endless stream of like little small crazy miracles. And I've gotten to have a life I could not even have written. Like, I just can't believe it on a daily basis that like I get to be this person that gets to be of service to other people in Alcoholics Anonymous for a living. This is crazy. I'm a special worker. When did that happen? You know, it's like, whoa. So I don't know. I couldn't be more grateful. And I am grateful to PG. I'm grateful to my friend Joan. I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for taking me to places I couldn't even fathom. And I hope that if you're new tonight, you'll stick around one more day and get one more day of sobriety, because that's all we ever have is one day at a time. So thanks, everyone.